Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio, it's time for Family Business Radio. Showcasing outstanding family businesses and the advisors who assist them.
Good afternoon. You're listening to an episode of Family Business Radio. I'm your host, Anthony Chen. Today, we have two powerhouse guests that's going to be talking to us about business growth and how to prepare business, not just for growth, but also for eventual exiting and succession. So to kick us off on the show here, we have Nathan Miller with Atlantic Consulting Solutions. Welcome to the show, Nathan.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Anthony.
Share with our audience, Nathan, as to what got you into business consulting.
My background is, after high school, I spent 13 years overseas, living in Germany and Spain and Italy and picking up a few languages and getting a few master's degrees over there. So my first dive into business was actually through nonprofit. And I was the national director of nonprofit in Austria for a few years. When I came back to the States, I started my own construction business in Kansas City, where I used to live. And then after that, I transitioned into marketing. I became a business manager for a marketing company. And it was only in the last few years that I really developed a desire to be able to lead business owners, because I was doing that together with our CEO and owner of the marketing company. And it was this last year that I reconnected with an old friend, Albert Assad, who has founded Atlantic Consulting Solutions and has been leading the company for the last 9 years. And so I've been a new addition to the team.
Great, great. So with kind of your background, most people wouldn't connect the dots of, oh, you go from nonprofit then to construction and then running your own marketing business. Share with us, like, how was that journey? If someone had came to you 20 years ago, hey, you're going to be doing business consulting, what would that conversation be like?
I think things just naturally developed. When I was overseas, I was started, like, my first master's is actually in anthropology. And so I was very focused on helping the human person and helping people grow. And so the nonprofit was actually with a religious organization. But when I came back to the States, I was like, okay, I wanted to start my own business and do something different. And I just, ever since I was a child, I just loved working with wood and being a handyman. And so that just seemed like a natural fit. And then I'm actually living in Atlanta now because of my wife, who is a psychologist and works here. And so when I moved to Atlanta, that was just a natural transition into marketing, because I was like, I knew about business and was looking for a new job. And so that was the transition there. Getting into consulting, like I explained a little bit, was just based on the fact that I was already consulting for the marketing company. I was the main man there helping them. And so when I moved also to Atlanta, I needed a new job and was able to reconnect with Albert. And that's the trajectory, how it went along.
Great. So when people hear the term business consulting, that could be 10,000 foot level of very vagueness. Can you share or explain to us, like, what is it that you specifically do, or what Atlantic Consulting Solutions do?
So as a business consultant, there's obviously many different types of consultants in the world, right? And our focus is really on the business owner. So we're focusing on small and medium-sized businesses, and we're there to help the business owner help their business to grow. So put everything in place to provide the structure for them to grow. So when we look at a business and we try to see what are the success factors, like what are the things that are really going to make a business be successful, we really notice that the vision of where the business is going is extremely important. And then also just the internal culture. And we would say, like, the management of the people. And when we say culture, we don't just mean having parties or whatnot, but really what defines that culture. If we look at a business like Tesla, for example, we see they're very efficient, and anybody who becomes a part of that team just has to be efficient. And so we help businesses focus on their own culture and to really define that so that they can also let that come out into their branding, and also help them in their hiring process and really get the team on board so everybody's on the same page. And then lastly, just helping them design their business model. In other words, we often mean finances by that, but it's not just finances, because when you look at finances, you're talking about numbers refer to things, right? And so when you're looking at numbers, it says a lot about how the business is structured and revenue streams coming in and how things work together. From a top-down approach, I would say when we help business owners, we're helping them structure their business in a way that has a solid vision for the future, solid branding, structure, and then all the finances are in place.
Funny you mentioned a lot about culture, because we just came back from a luncheon that was topic was about culture. So dig a little further in, because that term culture could sound, again, also very abstract. And for those who are more numbers oriented, okay, that's a little, at the end of the day, what's the bottom line for me? Can you explain or at least convince other people who are more numbers focused, like, where is that value?
Right. And let's not say that numbers are not important, because finances, and we do a lot of finance and we do an in-depth analysis and looking into the past and into the future and everything and helping people develop that. But when we're talking about culture, we're helping businesses define their mission, like who they are for the top down all the way to the bottom employee, but also in the face of the world. What is their mission and what do they want to achieve? But then from a different perspective, it's also what is their vision for the future? What do they want to become over the next 3 to 5 years? And then also all the values that kind of delineate or define who they are, from the owner all the way down to the lowest person in the company. Mm-hmm. And we usually recommend that they choose 3 to 5 words, like efficiency. Or we even have one of the businesses that we work with, they chose the word friendly. Like they wanted to be defined as the friendliest company in Atlanta for whatever it was. So defining that type of culture is not just something that you put on a plaque on the wall, but it then becomes part and parcel of how you hire your people, mm-hmm. how you train your people, and all of the expectations for everyone on the team. And that just enables you as a company to have clear expectations and provide quality training for your people. And then also to be able to see, are the people who are part of the business, are they a good fit? And then when you're hiring new ones, to be able to bring in the ones who are really going to identify themselves with your mission as a company. Mm.
So that was a quick example. So now the person on the other side is thinking, okay, well, you're showing something concrete or structure using your words. And then at the end of the day, how do you know when a business has a functioning culture versus a dysfunctioning culture?
That's a complicated question. I would say a culture should lead to unity in the team. So number one, and it's interesting that you asked that question, because there's been studies done that show that it doesn't necessarily matter that, like, what your culture is. And it's not to say that one culture is better than another, but if you have a well-defined culture, you're going to attract the people who are going to identify with that. So we spoke about Tesla, right? And the efficiency model. That's not the only model of a quality culture for a company. And there can be many types of culture. You could say we want to focus on friendliness, or we want to focus on, like we talk about Amazon, customer centric, right? And everything they do, all the decisions they make, they're based on their customer, not on the vendor, not on the product supply, et cetera. So that's just their choice of culture. And then in their business, their hiring process and their training process, that's what they hammer in. And so it becomes something around which everybody can focus and become a part of. And it just then helps define that culture moving forward and sets all the parameters for success.
Mm-hmm. So someone is listening in, whether they are scratching their head in regarding to their own business or they're working with a business owner, what are the signs they should be looking out for, and when do they feel like, or at what point in their business do they need to bring someone like yourself in?
That's a good question, because often the people who hire us are very good at what they do. Let's say they build pools, and they're excellent pool builders. Mm-hmm. And they're also very good at sales. So they are selling through the roof, right? And so they have a lot coming in, but often that is where, in that growth phase, in that growth process of bringing in more business, that's where they begin to struggle, because they don't have the structure in place, whether it be financial structure or management structure, or even the vision from, how do I get from here, I'm making today $3 million and I want to make 10 over the next 2 years. what structure needs to be in place in order to grow without killing myself? Because often, and it's a high percentages of businesses that start that end up crashing because of growth. And so a good fit for us is somebody who's already making a few million. They're excellent in their trade. They're really good at selling, but they need all the pieces in place and all the tools to be able to grow, whether that be financial tools or management tools, or even from a visionary strategic perspective.
It almost sounds like from an outsider's perspective is that the bottleneck is almost down to the business owner.
Exactly. And so for us, one of the very first things that we do, what we establish when we're meeting with a business owner from early on in the relationship, is our relationship with you is not just to help you as a business owner manage your business, but it's also to help you achieve your goals. And so there's business owner goals that we also have, which is number one, financial freedom. And I remember not too long ago, we're talking with a business owner who has a very successful construction business. And we were conversing, and he's, I have as much money as I need, as I will ever need, but I am not free. I work late. I work on the weekends. And so he was financially free, but not free in the use of his time. And so those are two goals that we try to achieve with a business owner, which is financial freedom to help them grow their revenue, grow their sales, grow their business, but also to be able to build up a team that they can rely on so that they're not stuck in the weeds. So that's one of the goals that we have for them. It's definitely being able to teach them how to lead in a way where they're not so bogged down in the day-to-day that they can't have time to really make sure that the business is going in the right direction.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a similar challenge for a lot of business or solopreneurs where you feel the stress or the burden is all on them and they're missing ball games with their kids and like, oh, I really would like to have that time back.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how can I step away? Because there's really two kids. One is, of course, their physical kid, and then there's the business, which is the other kid. So I guess then segueing right into that is like, how do you help the business owner navigate that balance or as you say, set up that structure? How would they even start?
Often we start with, again, with a strategic element. So I'm just thinking of one of the clients that we were meeting with just a few weeks ago, and it's joint owners, and they have a company where they're doing construction. And the first thing that we had to do was clarify what their roles were. Like, what is really the job description of even of the business owner and of the other partner in the business? And then being able to design what we call like an organizational chart. And I'm sure you've heard of those for businesses, but even small businesses, say they have 5 to 10 employees, to be able to build that out in a way that identifies all of the job descriptions for the people who don't even exist yet. And often, for most companies, commonly, it's a three structure. So you have your administrative side, your financial side, right? You have your operational piece, which is like getting the product or the service offered. And then you have the whole sales piece, which is sales, marketing, business development, et cetera. And so really identifying all the seats on the bus, even though the seats might still be empty. And so you might have a CEO or a business owner as in that position as CEO, but he's also leading operations and he's also managing the team and he's also running payroll over here in financial area. And so being able to define all of that and bring clarity then enables them to be able to additionally set a timeline for their future and to begin to plan for hires, right? Because they can say, I can get this piece off of my plate as a business owner. And then I need to train somebody to take over this role for operations, or I need to hire sales reps in order to lead my, you know, the sales team, et cetera. So providing that structure and that clarity for a top-down view then enables them to be able to build out the team little by little, piece by piece. And often it's one hire at a time, right? Yeah, you're not going to go out and hire 10 people, but you're hiring one piece at a time, often from a very strategic perspective, to say, what are the most urgent things or what could be the best hire to get things off of my plate so that I, as a business owner, can then dedicate most of my time to business development.
Good, because now you, at least for the audience and also for myself, can at least visualize, because you talk a lot about stress. All right, exactly what does that look like? But now we can at least see, I guess, either a web for lack of a better word, or org chart. We're going to go with that. And it sounds like you're right. You don't have the seat filled out right now, but we need to have a plan to eventually fill the seat. Is that kind of the end game?
That's the end game, because those seats are currently being taken up by one individual, might have like 10 different seats, right? Yeah. So your CEO is doing those various roles. And as the business develops, it's a matter of adding people to the team to cover those roles so that they have more freedom. Because ideally, and this is what we find, is a business owner should be spending most of their time in sales, because they're the one who, it's their baby, and they're just naturally much better equipped to be able to land new sales and to be able to develop relationships with other businesses or other partnerships, et cetera. And so that becomes the natural transition from doing the stuff, the technician part and the management piece, to him actually allowing him to be the visionary and the salesperson.
So then it's like we're coming full circle now. Back to the culture bit, you talked a little bit about recruiting the right people. So now we know it's kind of a rough imagery of what here's what we need. Now, how do we find these right people to be put on the bus?
And I'll go back to the mission and the vision and the values. And obviously, what we're doing as well is for each role, for each job description, we're defining what we need first. So we're not going out and looking for people before we know exactly what we need. And then obviously following just a regular hiring process, or using even companies that are to help you to hire the right people. But you have that structure from a strategy perspective, knowing what you need, and then it's a lot easier to identify, does this person fit, right? Because you're asking them, what are your values? Are you asking them if they're going to fit with the mission that you have as a company? And then little by little, you're filling in those seats.
So bringing it back in, I guess something even more concrete for our listeners is, what is the typical challenges that you find with the clients that you work with?
I would say one of the biggest difficulties is something that we really haven't dug into yet, which is the financial piece. Simply because you need clarity about how you are actually doing in order to be able to grow. Right. And so when we dig into finances, we'll do an in-depth analysis into the past, what we call a financial analysis, and we'll pull out even banking, like from a banking perspective, how they would give you financial ratios to be able to see your performance in the past. And often business owners don't have the tools in place to be able to take the data that they already have. So you're taking like a basic P&L and a balance sheet and your accounts receivable report, and you're plugging that all in there. And what we can do is run a report that will help them to see how their performance has been over time. And unfortunately, some will stay there. They'll be like, okay, that's how I'm doing. What we will do is we will help them build out a financial model looking towards the future. So we will help them to plan in a way that enables them to get clarity on the difference between what it costs them to run their business, which we usually call overhead or expenses, and the costs that go into the product or service that they're offering. That's often referred to as COGS or costs, right? And to be able to see the difference there and to categorize all that correctly so that they can plan for the future. Because if you know what it costs you bottom line to run your business, even though you're not making sales, then you can plan very efficiently for the future, being able to project the sales goals for the year and to project how much it's going to cost you if you, for example, open up a new location, or if you hire three more salespeople, or if you hire a new operations team. You're going to have much more clarity. And so often business owners will come to us and they'll say, yeah, my finances are in place because they have an accountant or whatever, but they're not using the data actively to be able to plan for the future and set those goals for the future. And so that's what we will definitely help them do. So that's the past. That's the future. And then there's a few tools that we use to help them in the day-to-day. And it really depends on your business. One of those tools is what we call the costing model. And that enables people to take their overhead expenses and bring it all the way down to their very concrete business unit. Let's take the example of an academy. So they have, you have a school, right?
Yeah.
And so if you take all of your expenses for the year and you know what that is, and they're pretty stable, and you have a certain amount of classrooms and you have a certain amount of seats in those classrooms, what you can do is you can figure out how much does it cost you as a business, right? This is a school, but it's also a business. How much does it cost you per chair, per seat in the entire school to run the school? Right. And that gives great clarity, whether or not that seat is full or not. That gives great clarity for a business owner. And in here, we're talking about a school. We could talk about a roof or per sales team, or, you know, just depending on, it could be per truck if you're running like an HVAC company. So it really depends on the business, but bringing those costs all the way down to the very concrete through that costing model. And then for those businesses that are still struggling with their cash flow, we have one last tool, which is what we call a cash flow forecasting tool, to enable them to see not so much on a year basis over the next year with my goals, but on a day-to-day basis or week-to-week, am I going to have enough money to pay my bills? And so we have tools and spreadsheets that help them do that in the day-to-day. And once we provide an owner or a company with those kinds of tools, they're able to make better decisions. And so when I say decisions, I'm talking about setting the right goals and bringing that all the way down to enabling their people to make the right choices about how they spend their time from week to week.
Wow. So for our listeners that kind of got a little bit of taste of, okay, not got me a little sold a little bit, at least on the culture part, there's at least I can see what's costing me or what's the value there. And also those who have perhaps are not using as much as they should in terms of what's available to them on the financial side, how can they best find you?
I would say the best way to find us is on LinkedIn, Atlantic Consulting Solutions. Find us there. You can also go to our website, atlantic-cs.com, and we can connect with you there. Even online, there's some tools. There's some really neat infographics that you can use, and there's even a scorecard that you can do yourself to score yourself to see how you're doing as a business owner. So that's where you can find us.
All right. Thank you. Now, segueing from our discussion of growing a business, now how do we sell or have a succession plan around the business itself? So we have Carl with Marsh Creek Advisors. Welcome to the show, Carl.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us. It's great.
Yeah. So share with our audience, what got you into the exit planning sphere for the business?
Yeah. So it starts out that I was third generation in my family business, Anthony. And so I love that this is all dedicated to family businesses. I was an interesting story because I tried to get away from my family business. I did everything I could to be as far away as possible. I went into a completely different career in education and helping students and teachers and parents and all that kind of thing. But over time, it just kept calling me back. Really glad that I took that break from being in the family, even though I had started in the family business from 5 years old.
Wow.
And cleaning shoes. So I learned every aspect of the business, but it also gave me a chance to experience outside of that. So here I am back in the business, third generation, partner with my cousin, and working with my mother and my uncle. My mom and uncle finally decided, okay, it's time. Mm-hmm. So my cousin and I bought the business from them and we got them their exit. Mm-hmm. And we looked at each other and we said, we have to decide, are we going to grow this thing or are we going to let somebody else do that? This is time for a revolution in that business. Mm-hmm. And we ultimately decided that it was the right decision to let somebody else take it to the next level. And I'm glad that we did that, especially because that was right before this thing called the pandemic.
Oh, wow.
And talk about grace and timing. Didn't see any of that coming. Mm-hmm. Couldn't take any credit for that whatsoever, but definitely a gift to not have to be responsible for shepherding 200 employees through that experience. Mm-hmm. Sold the business and have all along been teaching as an adjunct professor of business at the University of Georgia in the executive MBA programs. And so people come up to me knowing my background in the family business, knowing my background in education and and said, look, why are you not helping people do what you did and sell their business and find the right buyer and make the most? Nathan talked a little bit about the freedom that comes with owning a business. And then there's the ultimate freedom that comes when you decide to move on from that and sell it. So that's, I think that's a little bit of the theme today, is really making the most of freedom as a business owner.
So what would you have liked to know then as you were going through that process? Now, obviously you could not have predicted COVID coming in, but as you were making that decision with your, I believe you mentioned with your cousin, of, okay, maybe we should have someone else come step in to take the business to the next level. Like, how, walk through the audience through that thought and conversation process, because it's not easy for family business, it's just that burden that, oh, I'm the next generation. I don't want to be that generation that drops the torch. But that's like stepping away and say, setting aside your ego, this is what's best for the 200 employees and for the business itself. Like, how was that like?
Yeah. So that decision, we were regional at the time and we had, so I'll share a little bit about the business itself. It was in the wedding and prom space, bridal gown, tuxedo, suit, bridesmaids, all that. And so that industry was heavily impacted and basically those events disappeared off the calendar for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Obviously we didn't know that was coming. And when we looked at the industry as a whole, it was starting to consolidate and more successful operations were just larger. And if you think about what it is to participate in one of those events, especially a wedding, especially in Atlanta, we have people coming from all over the place, and being regional didn't help us there. So strategically, it made sense for the business to become nationwide. And we didn't feel like we had, our strengths were not in taking something from the Southeast to the nation. Mm-hmm. And that's why it was actually pretty easy to make that decision. It was logical. There are a few things, you asked me what I wish I would have known. Once we made that decision, there are a few things that I would have, that I wish I would have known then that I know now. One of them is that all advisors are not the same. I made such a mistake in, I went to a friend of mine who was very well respected and connected in the investment banking side, which is M&A on steroids. Mm-hmm. And I knew that he was not somebody that was going to assist me directly with the transition of this business, but that he was someone who's connected in the space and could help us find some good advisors. And he referred us to a connection and I took the family and we went to see them. And this was years before we were actually planning the event, but thinking about what might be next, and sat down with him. And the family walked out of that conversation at the end and felt really uncomfortable. Oh. And we couldn't put our finger on it exactly, but we just knew that wasn't right for us. Mm-hmm. And without being able to explain it, I made this assumption, an invalid one that I know now, was that if that represented the best possible experience, because in what it would look like to have an advisor help sell a business, then I didn't want to be anywhere near that. Oh. And so we went it without working with an intermediary, and that had its own set of challenges, which leads to the second, I think, thing that I wish I would have known. The second thing is one buyer is not an option. It doesn't, it literally gives you the option of either to sell or not to sell. And you've already made the decision to sell. Mm-hmm. So there is no choice when there's one buyer. And so I often hear business owners say, I've already identified a buyer, that part's done. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then there's no competitive spirit for your business. There's no real conversation around the value of business because it's just what one person has said they're willing to pay. And the way we really drive the price up for a business is to create a competitive market. Mm-hmm. So I would say the second thing I wish I'd known is that one buyer is really no option at all. And the third thing that I wish I would have known is what I call the second bite of the apple strategy. And most business owners, and I'll put myself in this camp as well, thought that there was either growing the business on your own or selling the business and exiting the business. And there is a really great option in the middle where you sell half your company to a capital partner, private equity, family office, and you work with them to grow the business. And what ends up happening is that the second sale turns out to be a larger number than the first. And when you put the two together, a couple of things happen. First of all, you're less stressed because you're not the only one responsible for this thing, the second phase. Mm-hmm. So you're less stressed. And then the second part about it is you have two liquidation events, and the sum total of that is much greater than typically what happens in the first, because with someone who's a capital partner infusing capital and also just someone who's excellent and practiced at scaling a business, and you have them in your back pocket, then it turns out to be a larger number. And so we've seen people that their first exit was $5 million, and then 5 years later, their second exit was $25 million. That's awesome math mm-hmm. any day of the week.
It's good that you mentioned or brought up the phrase second bite at apple, because most people outside the whole M&A sphere wouldn't know what that term means, or let alone, because most people, at least the stereotype with business owners, or I either sell or don't sell. That's that, as you would say, that's not much of an option. And then you brought in, well, there's actually a third route, and is being able to have a someone to guide you through that process and take that business to a next level, which leads to the next question of at what phase of a business or what time should the business owner consider that third route?
Yeah. When you think about, obviously a business needs to have a lot of systems and structures in place. A business that is attractive to a buyer is also a business that is fun to run. And so you want to have good management team in place. You want to have good processes and procedures and structures and systems in place, but it doesn't have to be perfect. It obviously has to be profitable. So you can't still be in the mode of investing all of your money back into the business. If it's not profitable, then it's going to be more challenging to have a variety of equity partners get interested in the business. Mm-hmm. But once we're starting to see net profits that are nice and healthy, and that number, by the way, is different criteria for different capital partners. So I don't want to say here's a hard line for what that number needs to be. Mm-hmm. But once that we're seeing a nice trend of increasing revenue, a nice trend of increasing profit, and we have a story to tell about the opportunity of the future, when we can put those things together, now it's a great time to start marketing the business. And we do it confidentially. There's not any pressure. If you don't get offers that you're excited about, the business is only better off for that it's had this opportunity to try. Because in the process of preparing your business for sale, you're going to learn a lot about how buyers view the business. Just the simple act of getting a business valuation, for instance, is going to help people, business owners, understand the value that's there and also start to understand the risks that are there from the buyer's perspective. And when you do that and you go to work on those things, you can increase value significantly. And then when you do come back to market, whether it's 1, 2, 3 or years down the road, now we have even a stronger business that's going to appeal to a greater number of buyers.
Then perfectly segueing to the next question would be the valuation of a business. Now, of course, every business owner would say, oh yeah, my business is the next Amazon. It's, no, it's not $1 billion. So how do you not only break that news, but explain to the business owners that would be listening in, what are some of the major factors that you see as a mistake that would actually devalue the business?
Yeah. Okay. That's a huge question. So there's a lot to unpack here. Yeah. And let's start, first take the to look about business valuations. I think that you're right. There are a lot of business owners who have a sense that their business is worth more than it is. In fact, most do. That's okay. And so we take a very fact-based approach and think that it's easy to look at this from when we take a house to market mm-hmm. in the real estate market, we can look at comparables mm-hmm. and we can say, what are other houses in this neighborhood and the same square footage, same age, same sort of look and feel, all that kind of stuff, what are they selling for? We can do the same thing with businesses. Now, the challenge is that information is very closely held. That's why someone like an advisor in mergers and acquisition can go do that research for you and has access to those, because we submit our sale information into a database and therefore have access to that database. And we can pull comps and help get a sense for what the value of the business really is. Mm-hmm. Another challenge about valuations is that there are a lot of different types of valuations. And there's valuations that you might use when you are looking to transition the business to, say, a younger generation, maybe for an ESOP, employee stock ownership, or a management buyout or a partnership buyout. So those things, you need a different type of valuation, right? One that's going to stand up to an IRS question. You also have valuations that someone who's going to help you buy insurance for, like, key man insurance, we call it, or buy sell agreement insurance, right? So those insurance advisors can run evaluations as well. The problem is that those don't typically look at comps in the market. And so they serve the purpose that they serve. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily tell you what your business is going to sell for in the open market when we have willing buyer and willing seller come together. I think that further adds to the confusion of what's the value of my business. What's the short answer to that? Go to an advisor and ask that question. Mm-hmm. So we can help. Now, the second part of your question was, what are some of the things that have the businesses that we value get knocked down in the value that we see buyers would attribute? Mm-hmm. The biggest one, time and time again, is owner dependency. And so, Nathan, you were talking, I see you nodding your head. You're talking about a business owner who can go on vacation. That's certainly a telltale sign. You want to be able to go on vacation because that's healthy for you, but it's also healthy for the business. It's a little bit challenging because business owners, they have their children and their business is one of the other children, and they really invest a lot of pride and sometimes ego in that business. And they want to talk about all the great things they've done with their business. And that actually increases this sense of owner dependency. And that creates more risk for a buyer, because when that owner is gone, what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. So owner dependency is one of the biggest issues. The second one that we see is revenue concentration. By that, we mean any particular buyer, any particular customer that represents more than 20% of the business that you do on an annual basis. Mm-hmm. And that's risky, because if that business goes out of business, then all of a sudden 20% or more of your book of business is evaporated and there's nothing you can do about it. So that's a situation of risk. I think the other piece is thinking about the type of revenue. Project revenue is nice and it can be very lucrative, but subscription revenue and contracted revenue is revenue that isn't going to go away when the owner changes. At least, at the very least, the new owner has a runway to develop their own relationship with the customers, and they're tied into that over the transition period, and then that they can solidify that. So a lot lower risk, a lot better situation. A couple other things that I'd say to pay attention to. One is messy books and records. And unfortunately, Nathan over here has given me a big thumbs up about
Absolutely.
This. Yeah. Unfortunately, we see it time and time again. I will tell you that in our own business, one of the transformative moments that we had was when we decided to relieve a family member of their responsibility in running our accounting and bring in an outside professional to manage that internally, who was very good at what she did. And that transformed our business. A lot of businesses grow their capabilities as they scale. And this is one area where we frequently see it impacting, and it shows up literally on paper. Mm-hmm. So that's another one. And the last thing I'd say is surprises. Business owners, they don't want to talk about the parts of their business that are more challenging. And we get that. But eventually, that's going to get discovered in due diligence. If we can have that conversation before we enter into an LOI, letter of intent to purchase a business, if we can have that, If we can get everything out on the table in advance, then we're disclosing and it's just simply the way it is. Mm-hmm. And we're not ashamed about it. If it gets discovered after that negotiation, then we, number one, have a buyer who loses trust in the process and in the seller, and two, wonders what else is there that they haven't yet found, and three, says because of this, we now need to what they call retrade, which basically means lower the price and renegotiate.
That's a lot, and I'm sure we're probably just scratching the tip of the iceberg here. Then flipping on the other side, because we focus on a lot of things that could go wrong. What are some of the things that you see that a business owner can have or already have in place that actually improves their value?
Yeah. One of the things that we just touched on there was about the type of revenue. Mm-hmm. And anytime a business owner can not just have customers that keep coming back, but customers that have promised to keep coming back in the form of a contract, that is really awesome. Working, and this is a perfect place where someone like Nathan can have an awesome impact, is to help make that transition to someone with a customer, relationship with a customer, where it's now in writing. Mm-hmm. So that's one that can really make a difference. The second thing is we've got to get all the things that you and your team just intuitively do out of your head and onto paper. If we can create a manual that people can come into and follow and understand and execute on, that makes a process repeatable. And repeatable processes are far more valuable because they don't walk out the door when you have a staff member who decides that it's time for them to retire. And by the way, a lot of staff transitions happen after they know that the business owner is going to be exiting the business, and you don't want the staff following you out the door. Mm-hmm. Their loyalty is great to you, but the new owner needs them to take over. So they need to feel loyal to the business, loyal to the customers that they serve, loyal to each other, and not have all that focused on the business owner. So a business owner who creates a culture of collaboration and that spirit that stands strong even when they're not there, that's super exciting to a buyer. That goes hand in hand with having an empowered and an engaged management team, that they make the decisions. A business owner who has people come to them asking questions and starts by turning the table back around and saying, "Sally, it's a great question. What do you think we should do?" And then stopping and pausing and really letting them grapple with it. And even when they say, "I don't know, that's why I'm coming to you," they say, "You're in this position because I have confidence in you. And I know you don't know right now, but I think you can figure this out. And I'm happy to talk through it with you. I get that you may not have all the tools and resources that you need right now to answer this. So I'd like to come back, have a conversation about this in a couple of days or a week. And I'd like you to at least throw me some options on the table. They don't have to be right. Mm-hmm. Not all the decisions I make are right, but let's try to come up with some options. And I really want to know what you think about this. And if part of that comes back to say, we're going to need to learn more in order to make the right decision, I want to hear that from you because you're closer to this than I am. You understand this better than I do. That's why you're here." And when business owners speak and think and act that way, they build an empowered, engaged team, and buyers love to see that kind of a management team. I think the other thing that we have to keep in mind is that we as business owners, a lot of us like to get things right. Not everyone's a perfectionist, but I think maybe business owners tend to have a little bit more of that tendency than the rest of the population. And I think it's important for business owners to keep in mind that the eventual buyer of your business wants to buy your business because they believe they have an opportunity to have an impact. They can see a place where they can grow it. If you've perfected everything, then there's not an opportunity for them to get a return on their investment. So it's okay to be very humble, say, "This is what I think we do well," but also say, "This is where I think we have an opportunity to improve. And that's part of the reason why I think I'm looking at potential buyers for this business who can have an impact here." That's kind of music to their ears.
Yeah. Wow. we can probably go for another hour talking all about how we can prepare to, for succession or successful succession or even having a second bite at Apple. How can our listeners and audience best find you?
Yeah, probably easiest way is LinkedIn. I guess this is one of the nice things about having a name that isn't too common. Carl Nikpon, easy to find me on LinkedIn. And we're also online, our website, mcreek.com for Marsh Creek Advisors. I think you can hear it. I love to just educate people about the process. I love to help people understand the value of their business and the opportunity in their business, whether it's today or tomorrow. We like to develop a long-term relationship. I would say, reach out to me. Let's talk about your business. And well, if I'm not the right person to help you, I think one of the best things about the community of folks in this space is that we understand each other's strengths and we'll connect you with the person who's going to help you take your business either to the next level or to the next owner.
I know there's probably just only one Carl Nikpon on LinkedIn, but just in case, would you like to spell it out for our listeners as they're typing it into their search?
That's Carl with a C-C-A-R-L and Nikpon, N-I-C-P-O-N. You could also, by the way, I guess I did the email address, carl@nikpon.com, just to make it super easy for people.
Yeah.
Schedule a time with me. We'll talk.
Great. Thank you.
My pleasure.
So going with the theme of today's conversation, all around culture and how can really fix some of the things in the business to really improve upon it for growth and set it up for success for a sale down the road. So to bring our two guests back with our universal questions, the first would be, what is a common mistake that you find with most business owners that is a low-hanging fruit, which can be addressed immediately? So again, that's what is a common mistake you find with most business owners that is a low-hanging fruit, followed by what is a common missed opportunity for businesses when it comes to growing and having a successful succession? So as we give our incredible guests here some time to think over, this is the legalese section of the show. The show is sponsored by yours truly, Anthony Chen, with Lighthouse Financial Network. Securities and advisory services offered through OSAIC member FINRA SIPC. OSAIC is separately owned and other entities and or marketing names, products or services referenced here are independent of OSAIC. Our main office address is at 575 Broad Hollow Road in Melville, New York, 11747. You can best reach me also along with LinkedIn at Anthony Chen. That's just last name, C-H-E-N, or my email, anthonychen@lfnlc.com. Bringing our guests back, again, the two questions. The first was, what is a common mistake that you see that is a low-hanging fruit that can be immediately addressed, followed by what is a common missed opportunity for business when it comes to growing and having a successful succession? Nathan.
Thank you for the question. I think the first one is very simple, actually, and I would say it's across the board. It doesn't matter what kind of business you're in. Focus on your people. Invest in your people. At the end of the day, people's what makes everything work, right? Mm-hmm. Finding the right people, but also investing in your people, spending time with them, and really trying to bring your people together, whether it be through regular meetings or training opportunities, but just really that decided focus to invest in them for their benefit and their mm-hmm. growth. The second thing would be ask for help. I don't think anyone is an expert in everything, right? And I think especially a business owner, they have a mindset of, hey, this is my baby and I want to take care of it. But often entrepreneurs, when they're getting started, they have this great talent, which is I'm going to figure it out. But as things grow, it's very important to find the experts who are going to support you. Find the CPA, find the attorney, find the consultant, find the marketing company, whoever it is, to be able to help you because they are experts in their field. And I think it's easy enough to do, but it's a hard psychological jump to say, I can't handle everything. But that would be the easiest recommendation for that.
Thank you. Carl.
Yeah, great question. And I'm going to piggyback a little bit on Nathan's answers here. We'll start with the most common mistake I see, and that is that business owners don't know the value of their business. And when 80% of your wealth, at least statistically, we understand that 80% of a business owner's wealth is tied up, locked away in their business. And if you went to your financial advisor and said, hey, what's my portfolio looking like? And your financial advisor said, let me get back to you. That would be a red flag. And yet we don't know about the largest chunk of our portfolio. So one is get a business valuation. And in our case, we do those many times complimentary for the business owners that we work with. So that's step one. This question about missed opportunities is definitely a ride along here because a lot of business owners, they are used to doing things on their own. It is lonely at the top, but you don't have to be alone. And I think the missed opportunity is not starting early enough. There are many things that you can do to improve your business and your personal financial situation and take more home over the course of a transaction if you have time to plan. But if you don't, then you're forced, some decisions have already been made for you and you lose flexibility. So I would definitely say missed opportunity is not starting early enough, not bringing in professionals. And look, as a business owner myself previously, I can say, I'm always looking at what's that gonna cost? Here's what I'll say. Any advisor that's really good at what they do will always way more than pay for themselves. And it will be a better investment because it's going to amplify what you do in the rest of your business and more than pay for itself. The return is absolutely there.
Thank you so much for your insights. Again, to close out, how can our listeners best find you to gather more of your insights and dig a little further beyond just the tip of the iceberg?
So once again, LinkedIn for us, probably Atlantic Consulting Solutions is an easy find, and our website is atlantic-cs.com. I can also be found on LinkedIn. My name is Nathan Miller. There might be about 20 of them there, but I should be connected to Atlantic Consulting Solutions.
Yeah, totally get that. Carl Nickpon and Marsh Creek Advisors, LinkedIn, email. We're really here. Just reach out and schedule a time to start the conversation.
Thank you both.
Great to be here.
It's been a pleasure.
So now a little, as we're closing down the show, we have what's called Anthony's Financial Take, and theme from our two incredible guests talking about how to plan, how to set oneself up for success. I think the theme really we're going to revolve around is don't be afraid to ask for help. Because at the end of the day, when we're planning for not just financial freedom, but also life freedom, having the time to be able to just maybe go out on a ball game with kids or doing the things that we want to do and not be chained to the business or chained to the 9-to-5 job. It takes a full team. It's not just myself here, although I'm a little biased having a financial advisor in your corner, but you should really have an attorney, a CPA, insurance broker, and many other advisors helping out in the sphere where each person may deliver more value than whatever that fee associated cost would come with. So at the end of the day, if you want to have financial and life freedom, you got to find yourself an A team. And thank you for listening to Family Business Radio.